Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 18. Prithu Maharaj milks the earth planet. Text number 23 and 24. Pasavo yadasam shiram vatsam kritva chago vrisham aranya patre Shadunkshan Mrigendrena Chabam Damstrina Kravyada Pranina Kravyam Duduhu Sve Kalevare Suparna Vatsa Vihagash Charam Characharam Evacha. The four legged animals, like the cows, made a calf out of the bull who carries Lord Shiva, and made a milking pot out of the forest. Thus they got fresh grass, green grass to eat. Ferocious animals like tigers transformed a lion into a calf, and thus they were able to get flesh for milk. The birds made a calf out of Garuda and took milk from the planet Earth in the form of moving insects and non-moving plants and grasses. Purport. There are many carnivorous birds descended from Garuda, the winged carrier of Lord Vishnu. Indeed, there is a particular type of bird that is very fond of eating monkeys. Eagles are fond of eating goats, and of course many birds eat only fruits and berries. Therefore the words charam, referring to moving animals, and acharam, referring to grasses, fruits and vegetables, are mentioned in this verse. Translation, the trees made a calf out of the banyan tree, and thus they derived milk from the form of many delicious juices. The mountains transformed the Himalayas into a calf, and they milked a variety of minerals into a pot made out of the peaks of hills. Planet Earth supplied everyone with its respective food. During the time of King Prithu, the Earth was fully under the control of the king. Thus all the inhabitants of the earth could get their food simply supplied by creating various types of calves and putting their particular types of milk in various pots. Purport. This is evidence that the Lord supplies food to everyone. As confirmed in the Vedas, Ego Bhavanam Yovidadati Kama. Although the Lord is one, He is supplying all the necessities to everyone through the medium of the planet Earth. There are different varieties of living entities on different planets, and they all derive their edibles from their planet in different forms. On the basis of these descriptions, how can one assume that there is no living entity on the moon? Every moon is earthly, being composed of the five elements. Every planet produces different types of food according to the needs of its residents. According to the Vedic Shastras, it is not true that the moon does not produce food, or that no living entity is living there. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Vrishtai Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamade Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vrcharane Nirvishesha Shivadi Vajjanyade.
Well, here we have the earth called the Mother Earth, and the earth supplies food, just like mother is supposed to supply food. So the Mother Earth gives food to all the living entities on this planet in different varieties. And there are many different planets, not only this earth planet, here it mentions also the moon. Krishna says, Gam avisha jmudani daryamaham ojasa puchnami chosadi sarva samobhudvara satvikaha. That I enter into the moon and I supply the juice of life to all vegetables. Gam avisha jmudani daryamaham ojasa. That I enter into the planets and by my energy they stay in orbit. I enter into the moon and supply the juice of life to all living entities. In other words, the material world is not just some
chance occurrence where there are many planets floating just to make the sky above us look more interesting. There's actually a purpose behind everything in the universe, and the purpose is not simply to fulfill our needs and purposes. It is not that the moon must be desolate, because if it wasn't we can't get any benefit from it, therefore we say it doesn't have anything of any value. Because if it has no value to us, it has no value. It might as well be a desert, according to our imagination. It is almost like the fox and the grapes. The fox, he saw some grapes. He was jumping for them. Finally, he couldn't get them, so he declared that the grapes must be sour. Because we have no access to the rest of the universe, we declare the rest of the universe as useless. And the scientists and others, they just create some kind of science fiction about what's going on in the universe, and it makes everyone feel happy. As if our mental concoctions are actually governing the universe here. All it is a waste of time and money. But people have come here to the material world to waste time. That's the whole purpose of the material world. They're thinking, everyone is thinking here, let me spend my existence trying to become God, which in the very essence of it is impossible. We don't try to become the big God all at once, we try to become the little gods. We don't try and lord it over universes, we try and lord it over our family, or if worse comes to worse, one carrot on our plate becomes an offering to us. The carrot paying full dandavas, completely submissive, ready to enter into us and supply our energy, empower us to eat more and more carrots and potatoes and other things. Therefore, the very existence in the material world is that men, everyone who comes here, has this idea, let me become a lord of something. And the more I become a lord of, then the more I'll become happy and satisfied. The more I become a lord, then the more I can enjoy. Although, qualitatively, as we see here, that everyone is trying to enjoy in the 8,400,000 species of life. Everyone has their food that they're trying to consume, and by consuming the food, it is more or less a mental idea. Now I'm controlling the material nature, and therefore I'm a little closer to becoming God. It is simply an idea that I'm actually controlling. Because when we look deeper into it, we'll find out we're actually not controlling. We may have an aspect of control, but that control has to be sanctioned by Krishna. Simply, we're desiring, and Krishna's making our arrangement. The little boy, he's trying to put the letter into the box, the post box, but he's too small. So his father picks him up, and he brings him to the post box. The little boy puts the letter into the post box, and now he thinks, I'm mailing the letter. He doesn't consider that without the help of his father, he can't do anything. Similarly, without the help of Krishna, we can't do anything in this material world. But we'd rather Krishna not be here, because that would spoil the whole purpose of our coming to the material world. That is to imagine that we're actually, somehow or another, becoming equal to Krishna. That we're somehow or another becoming independent of Krishna, and therefore we become a competitor to Krishna. But the result is, bhayam dvitiya vinivesitasya isharapatasya vipariyo smriti. So bhayam, that's the consciousness that surrounds the whole material universe, fear. Anyone who's not fearful, they're probably crazy. Because everyone's crazy, but it's just a question of degree. One who's a little awake, they must be fearful. Why? because our body is about to be annihilated. Old age, disease, and death, they're gradually taking away everyone's life. Ayu Hari, Ayu, Ayur, Haranti Vai Pumsam. Every time the sun rises, then our duration of life is being diminished. And the question is, what will be our next existence? Do actually most people have any idea? They have some philosophy, for instance, something about they're going to go to heaven. And in heaven, there's not a very clear understanding of what heaven is. Something about people sitting around playing harps and horns, and God is somehow or another, he's just determining who plays the harp and who plays the horn. And they don't even tell you what kind of music is going on there. It's just kind of same old harp and same old horn. Not a very exciting existence that's described. Nor is God, the relation with God, very clear. Something about God is just kind of sitting there, busy with his computer, judging people. And if you're bad, then you go to this place where it's hot, and there's no good food, everything is has a bad odor, and you're there. But it seems more interesting than even heaven does. Because it's people there, at least they have, they probably had more interesting lives than the boring people who are sitting around playing a harp and horn. In any case, it's not very clear. And why should someone go to one place and another person go to another place? I think I told this story before about the man who gave the $5 to the church. You remember this story? So one man gave $5, 5 euros actually, it's worth a little bit more, to the church because he heard that if he gives a donation to the church, he's sure to go to heaven. Although he was not a very pious person, he performed many sinful activities, and it wasn't very sure that he'd go to heaven at all. After giving the $5 to the priest, or the 5 euros, he demanded a receipt. The priest said, generally for 5 euros, we don't give a receipt. But he demanded so much that the priest finally relented and gave him a 5 euro receipt. After leaving his body, when the agents of death took him to the place of judgment, he was so attached that somehow or another he was able to bring along the receipt. He got to the gate where he was being judged, and Peter was looking into the book, and finally he judged this particular man, and he said, you're supposed to go to hell. So he said, wait a second, you're wrong. You got it all wrong. I gave a donation to the church, and I have a receipt. I'm supposed to go to heaven. It's written right here on the receipt. He said, no, according to the book, which is our ultimate authority, you're supposed to go to hell. No, no, there's no way. I got promised by the church. You're just representatives of the church. I'm supposed to go to heaven. Meanwhile, this argument was going on for such a long time that the whole line to be judged was being held up. God was looking out and he saw there was a big hold up, there was a big delay in the queue. So he came in out and asked Peter, what's the problem? Peter described it, that this man, he gave 5 euros to the church and he claims he's supposed to go to heaven. But according to the book, he's supposed to go to hell. God took out his wallet, took out 5 euros, gave it to Peter, and said, give him back the 5 euros and tell him to go to hell. The point is, people really don't know what the next destination that they have is. Therefore, they're always fearful. The material world is all based upon fear, because ignorance means fear. People identifying themselves with their temporary body will certainly be afraid that suddenly they'll be annihilated, and everything they're doing was simply a waste of time. Whether you were Adolf Hitler or, you know, Lord, or the most pious person, a great saint, everyone comes to the same position. That is, they come to no position. They simply disappear. It was all just a dream. The dream ends and you're not there anymore. Or you go to heaven or hell, and it's not very clear what actually happens there. Maybe you might decide to, later on, after being in heaven for some time, go to God, fold your hands and pray, "My dear Lord, please send me to hell, because at least there's rock music. There's something going on." Besides that, I like warm weather. And it's all due to this sense of competitiveness against God. Because people don't know they don't know that they're supposed to be working to attain Krishna or Vishnu. Dharashya ye bahya artamanina. They take something very insignificant as very important. Whether they're looking forward to the next iPhone, or they're looking forward to their team winning some kind of cup or match, or some movie that's about to come out, or the weekend, they can go to the pub. It is all dharashya, because it's punak punas charavita charavanana. They'll simply be chewing the same thing they've already chewed so many times, and they didn't find satisfaction the first time or the 100th time, but this time they have some imagination. This time it's going to be different. It may be different, it'll probably be worse. It may be better, but it's all insignificant. And it's all this sense that somehow or another I'm going to find satisfaction in my attempt to finding something to consume in this world, mentally, physically, emotionally, whatever. Consume it, and after I consume it, after I come out on top and feel myself to be the victor or the hero or the heroine or somehow or another taking Krishna's place, then I'm going to find some satisfaction in that endeavor. Whether you're trying to lord it over the stock market and manipulate all the economy because you and your ancestors have figured out a way of cheating everyone, or lording it over a carrot or a mouse in a hole, thinking that this is my kingdom. It is the same kind of mentality, producing fear and not knowing what the next destination, what the reaction will be. How is it possible, Krishna says, nashti buddhiya yuktasya, nacha yuktasya bhavanaha, nacha bhavyantakshandhira, ashantasya kutak sukham. That for one who's not in divine consciousness, they can have neither a controlled mind nor a steady intelligence, without which there's no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? If everyone's trying to become happy by their endeavor, how is it possible if their very endeavor makes them fearful? If every step we're taking, we're afraid what's going to happen. And if you're not fearful right now, just read the newspapers. There's plenty to excite the fear. If we're sitting around, we're too passive, we're too self-satisfied, just go out and talk to someone. They'll feel everything we do in this material world, more or less in modern society, is meant to invoke fear and anxiety, just to keep everyone controlled. Because our andaya tandira pagayamanas, te picha tantra urudami bhara. The people who are leading the society, they themselves are fearful. They're fearful that somehow or another they're going to lose control. So they learn how to keep everyone else in control. That is to make them fearful. A person is fearful, they can't take control because they're fearful. So keep them dependent, keep them fearful, keep them in ignorance, and that way they'll always feel dependent upon the big brother who will protect them and save them and direct them, always ready to put the lollipop in their mouth whenever they cry. But actually the real problem is, for everyone, whether you're the controlling boss of the universe, Lord Brahma, down to the insignificant insect, the Indragopa, as long as we maintain a desire to become somehow or another the lords in this material nature and control others physically, emotionally, psychologically, mentally, whatever, in order to feel ourselves to be the enjoyer in some way or another of other living entities in this world. Just like the sign says here, don't scare animals in the forest. Which means that, I don't know who drew it, it doesn't look like a Picasso. So. Children, they go in the forest and they take pleasure because they're afraid, and they go boo, they scare the animals because they're afraid. They figure if the animal's afraid, then it won't hurt it. So better make everyone afraid, that way they won't hurt me. So everyone's afraid in the material world, and they're trying to get alliances in their family to assuage, Osage, their fear. Therefore, deha patya kalatradi shu atma sanyeshva satsupi. They form the alliance of the family, my wife, my children, my home, my countrymen, whatever. Why? Because they're afraid someone's going to take their food away. Therefore, these people will protect me. They're my sanyeshu, my soldiers. But they're asatsupi. They're all temporary. They're all infallible. Not only someone's going to take their food away, but their very bodies eventually will become food for something or someone. Or we may get together to jump on some poor little creature or animal or collection of living entities and lord over them and try to enjoy them in some way, exploit them in some way. So the material world is forming alliances to protect my food or to grab someone else's food. And we may write books about it, we may glorify it, may go down in our history that the Western countries were all good and they defeated the all bad, whoever it may be, and that we were the heroes. And in 100 years from now, who knows who's going to be in charge? The whole history will be different. But actually, it's all persons who are all in ignorance fighting with each other. Just like the red ants are fighting with the black ants. And in the minds of the red ants, we're the good guys. And in the minds of the black ants, we're the good guys. And they fight with each other, and they're all killing each other. But who's the good guys and bad guys according to us? They're both a bunch of ants. It's useless. So we have this mental concoction that we're good and others are bad. But actually, it's all just a waste of time. It is all a mental concoction. Who's good and bad in the material world? It is simply fighting for Krishna's resources. And therefore, it's a group of thieves. They get together, they rob a bank. The head thief stands up and declares, "My dear fellow thieves, let us divide this money up honestly." For they're thieves, so where is the question of honesty? So anyone who takes this energy of Krishna and any species of life and utilize it for their sense gratification, they are being punished by being put into the material concept of life, by having a material body and having to experience birth, death, old age, and disease. That you can't get a worse punishment or the threefold miseries. The only solution is to take whatever food we have, whatever we have, and offer it back to Krishna. Then it becomes the vehicle of our escape from our material consciousness. It's our material consciousness of trying to compete with Krishna rather than trying to serve him. Krishna is the friend of everyone, therefore he knows what's good for everyone. And he's trying to do good for everyone. So only if we dovetail our activities with that of Krishna can we actually do good for ourselves or good for everyone else or anyone else. Everyone else in this material world, to some degree or another, is envious of themselves and others. They're envious of themselves because they're not working for their self-interest. If someone purposely doesn't feed themselves, then you may wonder, what is their self-esteem? Obviously they have some problem with their self-esteem, with their appreciation of their own self. They're starving themselves to death. So spiritually, everyone in this material world who's in ignorance, who's competing against Krishna, is starving themselves spiritually. It's not working for their real interest, they're working for some dead body. If someone spends the whole time, the whole day and night, for weeks at an end, repairing their vehicle, their car, making sure the car is clean and has a nice gas and oil, and keep on putting more and more gas and oil in, but never takes care of sitting down and eating for themselves, you may wonder, what is the value of their activity? Why do they have the car? They're neglecting the basic necessities that they have just to take care of a dead car. Why don't they take care of themselves or their friends? Similarly, unless we take care of the soul, it's just like taking care of only the dead vehicle. It's the bird in the cage. The bird in the cage is going, beep, beep, please feed me, but we're just cleaning the cage. So unless we take care of the soul, we're just wasting our time. And unless we try to take care of other people's souls, then although we may be praised for being a great philanthropist, a great altruist, a great nationalist, but actually we're a great person in ignorance, a great fool, along being appreciated by many other big fools or little fools. Of course, Bhagavatam will never be popular. People's sentiments will be hurt because we're all in ignorance, and therefore our sentiments are generally in ignorance also. Therefore, we generally don't talk. We had to give a public lecture and said, hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. You're all hogs, dogs, camels. And therefore, you're worshipping, glorifying bigger hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. It would not be very much appreciated. As a matter of fact, people wouldn't listen to us at all. They'd think that we're a bunch of crazy religious fanatics who have no subtle appreciation for the good that people are doing, but about the people who are feeding the poor, helping the sick. You people, when you get sick, that you're going to go to a hospital too. If you're hungry, you're going to beg for some food. Matter of fact, that's what you're, a bunch of beggars. You talk about God and you're servants of God, but we see you're just a bunch of beggars. And you're begging from us, who you're criticizing. Therefore, you're a bunch of hypocrites. Some people will see like that. But actually, it's just like Prabhupada said, the communists were saying, my dear peasants, this actually took place in China. When the communists took over China, they said, my dear peasants, I guess there were a few religious peasants in China. They said, go to your church and pray for bread. So they all went to the church and they prayed for bread. My dear God, please give us our daily bread. So he gave them, they came back. The communist said, have you gotten your bread? And the peasant said, no, we haven't, my dear communist friends. We have no bread. So ask us.
So they folded their hands and said, "My dear communist friends, please give us our daily bread." The communists said, "No problem." And they called for all their trucks, and they came and they handed out bread to all the peasants. And then the communists asked the peasants, "My dear peasants, who is greater, your God or us?" And they said, "You, my dear communist friends, you're greater because you're giving us our daily bread." And then Prabhupada asked, "If I was there, I would ask the communists, my dear communists, where did you get the bread from?" So people are thinking there are benefactors, the benefactors of others, but ultimately the material world has come from God, and everyone is a beggar here. The thing is, we realize we're beggars. We're practicing to be beggars. We're trying to beg from Krishna. We're trying to beg to become Krishna conscious. And people are simply thinking that they're the controllers, the enjoyers, and that they don't have to beg from God, because God's representatives have come and begged from them. They're greater than God. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Not that we go around, you know, as beggars for our own personal interest, in the sense that, you know, "My dear, help, please, sir, give me my daily bread." No, we're begging for Krishna. We're begging that they become Krishna conscious. So everyone feels, if you go up to someone and say, "My dear sir, you're useless," you know, I think that you're about the lowest person I ever saw. There's no sense of dealing with you. But if you give me a donation, it's for your benefit. They'll think, "Go away, you know. How dare you insult me?" But if you go up to someone and say, "My dear sir, as soon as I approach you, I notice you're effulgent. It was so bright I could hardly see you. You're the most opulent, beautiful person, intelligent person I've met." So, therefore the person will ask, "Yes, it's all true." The next thing is, "Since you're my devotee, what can I do for you?" So people like that people become their devotees, and they like to give benedictions to their devotees. That makes them feel more like their God. So we have to take that attitude. That's the attitude that our acharyas have told us to take. If we beg for our own benefit, then people may be suspicious. But if we actually appreciate people, give them appreciation, then they'll be happy to give us a donation. So more than beggars, we're devotees. Being a devotee is ultimately of Krishna. Krishna is giving us the intelligence how to deal with people so that they can actually be engaged in Krishna's service. Ultimately, we have to beg from Krishna, because Krishna is the one who's actually supplying everyone with everything, including ourselves. So unless we develop the attitude of begging from Krishna, becoming a servant, then we can't really progress in devotional service. Queen Kunti said, if you think that by developing material power, by developing material influence and wealth and beauty,
and material education, that you're going to become more and more successful, the more you'll become independent controller of the universe, then it's impossible to chant Hare Krishna with sincere feeling, because one will become more and more deluded by ignorance. Therefore, that attitude should be there, but in such a way as to convince people to take our books and read them. There's different ways of begging. But ultimately, we're begging from Krishna for the intelligence, how to deal with people so they can actually become Krishna conscious, so we can engage them in Krishna service. Anything else? Kala. Grantarashima Bhagavatam Kijai. Prabhupada Kijai. Or Priminande.